Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to a new episode of Wizards After Dark, and a special one today. I'll say a super special one because, you know, normally I have on my colleagues and other people. I guess sometimes it'll be other people around the league who aren't necessarily at the Athletic, and I'll have them on. And today, this is the first episode, at least of this season, in which I'm having on the competition.
I was like, am I going to be introduced as your like mortal enemy here?
Yeah, well, that's what you are. So I'm having Ava Wallace from the Washington Post is on the Skype line.
Mortal enemy of all Fred Katz's of the world.
Yeah, I feel like what people who aren't beat writers don't understand, and how could they, is it's this really, really weird office dynamic where when you're a beat writer, your colleagues are the people you never see. And your competition is basically the equivalent of your workplace colleague who you see every day. Well, not now because the world is messed up, but in general. And like, you know, I'm sitting next to you or sitting next to Candace or sitting next to Chase Hughes at every game. And like those people are technically your competition, but are in practice, like feel like your colleagues. It's a very weird thing. Like I can't really think of other jobs outside of this where that's the case.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no one else who I'm in a blood feud with who I talk to as frequently as you. So I'm with you on that. I can't really think of anything. Yeah, for the first three years that I was at the Post, I covered Virginia and Virginia Tech and just spent like so much time in Charlottesville and Blacksburg, Virginia, and never saw my actual Washington Post colleagues. And that was very weird because like the people I talked to every day were like a horde of middle-aged white men in Southern Virginia. It was great. It was a fun time.
Yeah. I mean, that makes perfect sense. That's the same thing. Like when I was at a newspaper in Oklahoma, it was like, the paper was in Norman, which is 25 minutes south of Oklahoma City. I lived in Oklahoma City. I covered the Thunder. I went to Thunder stuff. I saw Brett Dawson. I saw Eric Horn. I saw Royce Young. I saw the rest of like the Thunder media corps. And those were the people who I saw. And once a month, I went into the office to fill out an expense check, and that was it. Mm. And that was when I saw people. And that was it.
I forgot that paper is in Norman.
It's not just named after a guy named Norman. I've always thought the Norman transcript sounds like some guy named Norman. Like Norman Powell started a newspaper.
Do you have a Wizards question for me, Fred?
We're not talking about the Wizards.
this is a Wizards afternoon podcast that's about everything but the Wizards.
Perfect. Yeah. I have a question for you. Okay. Are they good or are they not good? They won 7 out of 8. And they were looking like they were good. And now we're recording this one at around 1 o'clock on Monday, the 15th. I think we'll get this up before the Bucks game tonight. But if you're listening to this on Tuesday morning or something, because you check it on your way to work, there's a reason we're not talking about the second Bucks game. We're recording it before then. Yeah, they've lost 5 out of 6. Maybe by the time you listen to this, 5 out of 7, or maybe 6 out of 7. Are they good? Are they not good? Are they in between?
Can you be a good team if you're this inconsistent?
Not if you're this inconsistent.
Yeah, I think that's the answer right there. I think you have to perform a little bit more consistently to be considered a quote unquote, whatever definition that means, to be a good team, which is the frustrating part, I think. Certainly a little bit for us people who objectively cover the team. Definitely, I think if you're A, on the team, or B, actually root for the team, like knowing that the Wizards can play the way they sometimes can, whether that's over their little West Coast trip there or watching Rui Hachimura do Rua. I sound like Charles Barkley just then. Rui. That's definitely how, if Charles Barkley has ever said Rui Hachimura's name, that's 100% that how he pronounced it.
There's like a 63% chance Charles Barkley doesn't know Rui Hachimura.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And if you know Rui Hachimura, I don't even know, whatever. That's my Charles Barkley impression. It's really frustrating, both encouraging and frustrating, to watch a player like Rui shoot with such little hesitation, make his shots, play super aggressively. Super probably a little bit frustrating to watch the Wizards do that without Bradley Beal and then also play the way they did against Philadelphia on Friday night. Like, so no, I don't think you can be that good of a team when you waver that much and when you have such chemistry issues this far into the season.
So you know what's crazy? You mentioned the consistency thing, and that's something they talk about a lot. And I was running through it the other day because all I do is think about the Wizards, and right. I was just kind of going through like, okay, how many guys on the roster do you know what you're getting out of? Like, yeah, every once in a while, a role player is going to have an off shooting night. That's not even what I mean, but just in terms of like how they're going to play, how they're going to perform in the non shooting areas. How they're going to actually impact winning. What do you just like, who do you put on the floor for however many minutes they're supposed to get? And you know what you're getting out of them. They are reliable. You don't have to worry about them. And so few guys fit that category for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Beal obviously fits that category. Yeah. He has an off shooting night every night. The dude has scored under 20 points twice all year. You know what you're getting out of him.
Lopez.
Yeah, kind of Lopez, but Lopez is so matchup dependent that like sometimes he'll do really well against a matchup that works against him. But like if you put him up there against a five who shoots threes, he's in trouble. You know, you have to stray him from the paint. He's in trouble. There's some nights he'll look super off. I think
Scott Brooks has been pretty judicious about using him for that like they use him on those specific matchups for that reason.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's what I mean though, like roll him out there for 20 minutes every night because different nights you're just gonna get, he's matchup dependent, and on different nights you're going to get different production out of him. Like I feel like Beal fits that description. I feel like Neto kind of fits that description.
I was gonna say Neto and Beal and like maybe Garrison, and that you know what he's going to do. Even if he doesn't make all the shots, you know exactly kind of how he's going to play and what he's going to do and where he's going to set up. But like, it's really slim pickings.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a really small number.
Yeah.
I mean, three guys. Well, let's run through it. Let's run through this right now. Cause I think this is an interesting activity, and we'll kind of be good in showing why the team overall is so inconsistent. Cause what, I mean, Westbrook, we're certain that's not the case with him.
Mm-hmm.
Rui is weird because he's so inconsistent in the way that he plays, you know?
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. some nights he looks like, okay, I am going to take my threes. And other nights he says, no, I'm going to get to my mid range spots. And some nights he's kind of feisty guarding the ball, and other nights he's a little more hands off. It's not like other teams forcing him into stuff. It's just, I don't know. Like you mentioned it, he even went, you know, as well as he played for three quarters in that Bucks game the other night. Like he just kind of went absent in the fourth.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing about when the Wizards always say Rui can guard 1 through 5. It's like, yeah, Rui can do a lot of things. Like, they're not wrong when they kind of tout him as this like all around super versatile player, but that's also not always a good thing that he doesn't like have his strengths that he sticks to. Because Scott Brooks has also said this season, you know, something he always tells players, he always tells Russell Westbrook, I think this was one of your like leads in a story one time, where it's like, do what you do well, do, you know, stick to what you know and stuff like that. And Rui's definitely still finding his niche, and it feels sometimes obvious as to the things he should be really drilling down on and really getting good at. But then sometimes he just like you said, can absolutely show a completely different shade of his game. And you're kind of like, where did that come from? Have you been working on that? Why don't you work on that more? Stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Bertans, I'm going to make the make shot, miss shot exception for him, because his role is completely dependent on making and missing shots. Like, yeah. That is what he is. And Bertans has been inconsistent. Denny's been inconsistent because he's a rookie, and rookies are inconsistent. All three of the centers. You're right. It's kind of just Matthews I'll throw in there. You kind of know what you're getting from him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's hovered at around the same percentages all year and does the Garrison Matthews stuff. And then Neto and Beal, which is such a weird group. If I told you I was categorizing Wizards players in a specific way, and the three players were Beal and Neto and Garrison Matthews, you would never be able to guess what we were categorizing.
What else do those? Okay, other than the fact that they're Wizards players, other than literally the category we're putting them in now, what else do those guys have in common?
Nothing. They're guards. That's it.
Yeah, they're guards. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Yeah, you would think we were naming Wizards guards.
Ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very weird thing, though. It's a very weird thing. Can we talk about how you guys screwed me with the Alex Len availability the other night? Can you explain to me what happened with that?
Yeah. So here's what happened. Well, I'll use I statements. I'll speak for myself. What happened on Friday night was I arrived at the arena after Scott Brooks' availability, as I always do, because I'm lazy. And at 6 p.m., feeling great, doing fine. At 6:15 p.m., I went into a full body crisis because I had gotten my coronavirus vaccine earlier that day, and no one told me that like maybe 7 hours later you'll just feel like you can't move your entire body, and will feel like every single muscle in your physical being is on fire. So that's what I was dealing with. So at the end of the game, after waiting for Russell Westbrook, my coronavirus vaccine addled brain immediately shut off my computer, sent my final quotes, and was like, I'm going to now slowly walk back to my car to go home so I don't actually die in this arena. And listen, if you don't get Alex Len on there before Russell Westbrook, that wasn't happening for me on Friday. I'm sorry. Like,
who requested we talk to him?
Did I request him?
Who requested him?
No, I think I did. I think it was me.
That's it was you. Saying. Yeah.
Like,
so,
I'm pretty sure I was like, oh, I could talk to Denny. I could talk to Alex. But like, Russell is always, when is Russell not the last player to talk to us over Zoom?
Okay.
We do all the players, then we wait an extra 30 minutes. Then Russell Westbrook talks to us.
Wait, I'm jumping in with background. So the way this works is, after games, we have to send a text to the Wizards because the world is completely messed up and no person is allowed to be near any other person. All post-game availability is over Zoom. We don't see players anymore. We're not in person with anybody. If you go to the arena, you're all the way up top. Ava goes to home games. I don't go to home games. We get the same amount of access. That's the way the world is now. That's the way the league is now. It's the way it should be, considering all the lack of safety that would occur if we were all jammed into one room in a press conference. And so the way it works is, we have to text the PR representative and say which players that we would like to talk to in the post-game press conference. Ava throws out on the text thread Alex Len. And then, for some reason, Alex Len does media availability from his living room at home, goes out of his way. I'm assuming that he left the arena.
I was gonna say, he didn't go that out of his way. Like, he did straight up leave.
He was home. Once you're home, it's over. I don't need to see your living room couch. Right. I just need to invade your privacy to that degree. And
second time he's done that also.
And Ava put in a late request for Alex Len. basically an after the buzzer request for Alex Len. Alex Len gets on the Zoom. It was 45 minutes after the buzzer for Alex Len. Alex Len is nice enough to get on the Zoom from his home on his phone, fights through home internet issues, takes 5 minutes to have the patience. Nobody raises their hand on the Zoom to ask a question. I do it out of awkwardness, ask him one question about the center rotation, and then Ava is nowhere to be found. So,
yeah, well, I got to tell you.
And no one else is anywhere to be found either. He takes one question, says, all right, thanks. I say, thanks for the one-on-one. And then we're done. So yeah, you made Alex Len go on his phone from home for no reason.
I think the real frustration here is you blew your one-on-one with Alex Len. That's what I'm sensing, is that you had one of the Washington Wizards' three centers to yourself on Zoom, and you didn't ask him the hard-hitting questions.
The starting center for the day. What do you think of the three-center rotation? It's very weird. That's the one thing that I did ask Alex Len about, and he was like, yeah, it is pretty unconventional. I don't think there's another team in the league that, and I'm not even saying it's quite honestly, it's the center roulette thing. It's easy to jab at. I don't think it's that crazy. I jabbed at it last year when Scott Brooks went with three centers, when he was trying to play Mahimi and Thomas Bryant and Mo Wagner all in the same kinds of games, and played them like 16 to 20 minutes. And there were minutes restrictions in that case, which made things a little more complicated. But it was still a very weird thing to see. This is a little bit more intuitive, but like, it's also just based on normal basketball convention. Like, Mo Wagner was your starting center for what, 13 games, 14 games? And then he just literally didn't play. And Alex Len, who probably, I mean, Lopez gets the most night to night playing time of any of those three guys.
Yeah.
Alex Len, who's kind of on the back end, all of a sudden jumps into the starting lineup. And they're kind of all the same level of player. I mean, I would be willing to argue that any of them was better than the other, or I should say I would be willing to listen to an argument that any was better than the other. It's such a weird thing, that three center rotation.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is definitely, I understand what you mean when you say it feels more intuitive now because of the Wizards kind of having to scramble a little bit at that rotation. And it clearly makes sense, where it's just like, and Scott Brooks has kind of come out and said this, like, Robin Lopez just like cannot play that many extended minutes in a row from game to game. And I do think they would, he is very matchup dependent. I like to think that they would lean on him more. And I say that because I think he has good chemistry with Westbrook. And I think his style has the most impact on the identity of the team when they're playing well. I think they used Wagner really well when they needed to kind of shake things up. And that seemed to me more like Scott Brooks kind of throwing things at the wall. And it really stuck because they liked Mo's energy off the, you know, from the start when they were struggling there with slow starts. But I think the way that Robin can not just, you know, be a good defensive center, but the way he can impact the offense too when they need him to, and connect with Russ and kind of make those consistent hook shots that we always make fun of. That's when I think of the Wizards starting center, I now think of Robin Lopez, even though I know logically in my mind that's not really ever the case. But he's the one to me that makes the most like impact in that kind of category, I guess.
I wanted to ask you, while we did this too, because we actually haven't really talked about this much. It's more just been like us complaining about the ways of the world. But this is you've covered the Wizards before. You've stood in for Candace before. You've helped out Candace before. But this is your first year where you are like the full-time Wizards beat writer for the Post. And this is a crazy year to be your first full-time NBA beat writer.
What do you mean?
How so? Yeah, you couldn't guess how, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, so much of, I don't know if people on the outside realize how much being a beat writer is interacting with people and talking to people not during press conferences. You know, I think the stuff that you see, or that people on the outside see, is, and that's not anyone's fault, because that's, You know, what you see is press conferences and all of that. And what you see is maybe quotes that you might get on the record, even if they're in one-on-ones, and then you write or you tweet or you put on a TV show or whatever. And that's what you see. But that's the tip of the iceberg. I mean, so much of being on a beat, so much of, you know, the stories that you find and that you write, or the anecdotes, or whatever, maybe just a little piece of information that you learn. Oh, hey, the Wizards tweaked this really subtle thing in their defense, which you learned from talking to somebody with the Wizards who just mentioned it in a casual conversation. So much of that is behind the scenes. It never sees the light of day, and just has to do with building relationships and, you know, talking about the right things and getting to know people and being, and just kind of consistently being there. Like when you're on a beat, people just kind of know you as like, yeah, that guy, he's always here. He's, or she's always here. And that's it. And we're never there anymore. So what is it? I mean, you've been on beats before. You've just never been on the Wizards beat. What is the biggest challenge right now in like doing a beat writing job in your first year covering this team, when you don't have those advantages of being able to walk right up to people and talk to them about just like casual life things?
Yeah, it's that. So I would say at first I thought it was going to be building relationships, because like you said, like the way that you get to know the people we cover as non-basketball, you know, as actual human beings, which they are, sometimes, is by not talking to them exclusively when you have a story to write or an actual question to ask. Like that's an exclusively transactional relationship. The way you build a non-transactional relationship is by like seeing whoever in the hallway and just like waving or being like, oh, cool shoes, or like, oh my gosh, you brought your dog today. Like, wow, that's great. Let me, you know, pet this animal. I don't know why that came out of my mouth, but whatever.
Troy Brown stuff. Troy Brown,
yeah,
brought the
dog.
Yeah,
because I'm just daydreaming about Dex. but so that's been hard. But I honestly think the weirdest thing this year has been the thing that probably interests me most about the NBA, and I would kind of venture to guess interests a lot of NBA writers the most, is it's been really hard to build an understanding of how an organization works. And it's hard to do that when you're coming in on the first year anyway. It's even more hard to do that when you're not seeing, okay, who are the front office people who are watching practice every day? Who's up in their office? Who are the ones who are, you know, how do these people interact with Tommy Shepard, the GM? How do they interact with Scott Brooks? Like who talks to who? Who looks scared of who? Who, you know, like things like that, where you just like, it's hard to have a fundamental understanding of the team that you cover without actually being around the team in person. Like, especially since it's not like we're interacting with those people on Zoom. Like the players, you kind of can get a sense of, I am finding that even though there are fewer stories, because like you said, those like little things that you pick up on after practice or whatever, there's just less chance to write the more creative, quirkier stories. But still, we see these guys on Zoom very often. I think they know a lot of our names and faces by now. But from the organizational standpoint, it's not like we're jumping on with whatever assistant coach or whatever, you know, director of scouting or whatever on a Zoom. Like that stuff is really hard to see. And I think you have to have kind of that foundational understanding of the organization and the team you work for to really understand everything else from there. It kind of starts at the top to me, especially in this organization. And that I've found to be kind of the most challenging thing. And then going out from there, just learning the league, you know, it's like, it's really funny. We keep talking about how all the rookies like didn't have summer league and they didn't actually get to go to the draft. And it's like, I didn't get to go to any of those things either. And you know, from what I understand, but like, those are the places where everybody in NBA media gathers, everybody from every front office gathers. A lot of agents are there. That's where you meet people. That's how you kind of gain your understanding of what this massive NBA ecosystem is like. And I definitely missed out on that. I'm looking forward to it next year for sure. But it's been, I feel really weird reporting on some of this stuff sometimes, just because I'm like, well, yeah. I guess I will now call this agent who I've never met in my entire life and or talked to and be like, hey, tell me some information. Like, you know, that's been really weird.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I know what you mean. It's not even that. I mean, it is that, but there's so much more to it. I mean, you know, people talk about reporting like, well, the most important thing with reporting is, you know, making sure you have sources, and that's an important thing. But really, the most important sources that you can have is your two eyes. And when you see something happen, you're good. You saw it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't even mean for like finding scoops. It's just like knowing which assistant coaches, when you get into the end of practice — we can't watch all of practice, but when the world is normal, we can watch the end — knowing, you know, being able to walk into practice and seeing, oh, okay, so this player is working with this assistant. That's who they're working with. They have right. assistants who they exactly. focus with. That's how every NBA team in the world works. Mm-hmm. This guy's working with this assistant. Okay, that's interesting. Oh, I've noticed they've started to have a really good relationship. And then you talk to people about that relationship. Oh, you find they've gotten really close. Oh, there's a nice relationship there. Or, oh, they're working on this one thing to help their game or whatever. I mean, there's so many little intricacies that don't happen. And by the way, this isn't a complaint. They shouldn't happen. The league should be as safe as it's being in this particular case. I'm not even going to home games, so clearly I'm not trying to mingle with other people. I haven't seen another person in a year. So I'll keep it at that.
We're not criticizing the league for not, you know, doing any of this stuff.
No, we're criticizing the world.
We're base complaining, which is literally all we do when we get on the phone with each other.
So, just, you know, complain.
Here's your insight. What is it like to be a first-time NBA reporter the pandemic year? It's a lot of complaining.
It's a lot of complaining. Okay, let's take a couple Twitter questions. I have a new segment. It's called Taking Twitter Questions, in which I take Twitter questions.
That's a really bad name.
We're still workshopping the name.
Okay.
All right. Here's one which I just enjoy. This one is from Wiz Nation Brazil. And you would think you would think it would be about Raul Neto.
Yes.
However, the question is, any chance of Otto Porter coming back to the district via a buyout?
Okay, this is the second time I have been asked this on a podcast today. Otto Porter, how many burners do you have?
Why are they Brazilian burners? I will say that from what I've been told, Otto Porter is not going to take a buyout.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't. Where did this come from, other than Brazil? Like, yeah.
I mean, the Bulls are not playing Otto really right now, and he hasn't been great for them, and he's making a lot of money. And the Bulls are what, like 16-20 or something like that. I think the Bulls want to make the play-in. I don't think the Bulls are trying to just.
Eastern Conference team should want to make the play-in, first of all.
Yeah, I don't think they're trying to fall off and tank. And you know, Porter has not been great for them. And he makes a lot of money. His number is like 28 something this year, but that makes it really, really hard to trade for him. And I think some people think, okay, large money, final year of a deal, possible buyout candidate. He can go somewhere else. A lot of guys don't want to be buyout candidates because, I mean, first of all, you lose your bird rights. So the Bulls are going to have Porter's bird rights if he loses. Also, like, once I've heard some stuff about guys who are rumored to be buyout candidates now, and some of them don't want to be buyout candidates because they're just like, it's too early in my career. Once I'm a buyout candidate, I'm a minimum guy. And I remember having a conversation with someone recently where like Jeff Green was coming off a nice year, and somebody said to me — this was someone in the league — somebody said to me, like, why is Jeff Green getting a minimum contract again? Like, he was good last year. Why is he a minimum guy? I was like, because he was a minimum guy last year. And once you're a minimum guy, you're kind of just a minimum guy. Like it kind of, it almost reflects real world salary negotiating in that sense, where it's like when, if you or I were to talk about a new job, we would negotiate off of the salary we currently have, you know? And so it makes it hard for a guy who's at 28 and is still in his 20s to be like, nah, I'm going to be the minimum guy now, when maybe he could. I mean, Otto Porter will not get the minimum after this year. I don't think, you know, he'd get the taxpayer mid level or something. I haven't asked people what his market would be. And I'm sure he just doesn't want to give back money. I don't know what's in it for him to give back money. So, you know, it's not like he's been a world beater who's going to take somebody to a championship in the buyout market, you know?
And that's why I say, like, where is this coming from? Because I don't think anybody has given any indication that that's how Otto Porter thinks of himself or, like, thinks of this season with the Bulls, honestly. I do, because it's not getting an Otto Porter type person is not at all like a weird thing for the Wizards. It was more on the Otto side, not on the Wizards side. Like the Wizards could, you know, like everybody, they're kind of saturated with guards right now, but they absolutely could make use of kind of like a veteran wing guy to play at the three, to play behind Brad if, you know, Brad's gonna be out at ever again or kind of dealing with the niggling stuff that he's had twice now this season. Like, that's not crazy for the Wizards. It's more like you said, it's like, it's not good to be kind of tagged a buyout dude.
No, it's not. And I understand why a player wouldn't want to be that. And there are so many buyout candidates in the league right now. There's so many guys who either are sitting out or were Blake Griffin and did sit out. And it's just, there are other ones. All right. Other one. And then we'll wrap up.
An eye on their bottom line this year.
Yeah. And then, this one is from Deuce.
Bradley Beal's son, Deuce Beal?
No, Jason Tatum's son, Deuce Tatum.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. No, he's really good with computers. Will the Wizards make a move before the trade deadline?
Before the trade deadline?
Well, they're not making one after.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as opposed to...
Like, will the Wizards make a move in the next 10 days?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I think they will.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
you said, especially since there's one, it's still, you know, you're under the organizational mandate. We're still gunning for the playoff spot. They have needs that could be kind of filled with not too much of a stretch of the imagination or a stretch of the pocketbook. And they should be active. They're in the hunt still, for sure. And so I think they will.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of move it's going to be. My guess is it will be something. It's not going to be anything huge.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to, I don't think across the league there are going to be blockbuster moves made. The Brooklyn Nets already did all of those for the season. And I just don't think, like I was saying, I don't think there's money flowing back and forth like that, other than the stuff that we've already seen. And even the Blake Griffin move, that wasn't like crazy money or anything like that. Yeah. But I'm not expecting a wild trade deadline.
Me neither. I think PJ Tucker is going to get moved.
What about Drummond?
I think Drummond is going to end in a buyout.
I
don't think he's going to end up getting moved. That's my guess. I assume LaMarcus Aldridge is going to end in a buyout.
Yeah.
But from talking to people in the league, they say the Spurs are very confident they're going to be able to find deals for him. So I don't know. I mean, what's weird is that I feel like everybody assumes Drummond is going to end in a buyout. And a lot of people have said that Aldridge is going to, like, there's a pretty realistic chance Aldridge ends in a trade and not a buyout. But if you're offering a package for Aldridge, I mean, Aldridge and Drummond only make a $4 million difference. It's 24 to 28 in terms of salary. Like, you can probably offer an Aldridge package for Andre Drummond and just get Andre Drummond. And a lot of the teams that would want Aldridge would want Drummond. So it's a weird juxtaposition. I don't know why that is, but so I still lean just based on, you know, how these things tend to work out and the way that Aldridge has played this year. I lean towards him being a buyout, but I don't know. There are a lot of people who know what they're talking about who think that a trade is very possible with him. I think the OKC guys are going to get traded. I feel like OKC is sitting on a bunch of deals. I think they've got offers And so I don't know if it's going to be, I think Horford will stay, but I think Ariza, I bet you they find a spot for Ariza. I just, it would be very un-Thunder-like to waste an expiring veteran and not get something back for him. Like, they're always trying to recoup assets for guys.
That's how I feel about the Spurs, honestly, with Aldridge.
That's plausible. It's just hard. Yeah, it's just hard. The Spurs never make trades. It's a weird Spurs thing.
Yeah. Well, it's because they usually, most of the time, they don't need to. Like, they draft so well and they acquire just like exactly the type of guys that they usually want. You know, even when they're kind of like a ragtag group of young nobody issues, no shots to Lonnie. But yeah, that makes sense to me from the Spurs' point of view.
Yeah. I mean, I think there'll be some movement, but nothing huge. I don't know what the Wizards will do. I think it'll be something like nothing that is going to get the lead SportsCenter with. But I have a feeling they're going to do something that will shore up something. They have too many holes, and they still want to get into the play-in tournament, and they have too many holes, whether it's their 3-point shooting or the perimeter defense or the basically everything except for playmaking, they could justify upgrading. Yeah. So,
and they've shown they can be creative with limited money available before too. I definitely have faith in the front office to find workarounds and put people together and things like that for sure.
Yeah, you got time for one more Twitter question?
For you, always.
Wow. All right, this one's from Kike RG.
Okay.
Do you think the Wizards will use their disabled player exception this season in the buyout market with their current big men situation? So before we answer, I'm just going to explain disabled player exception for listeners who might not have memorized Larry Kuhn's salary cap FAQ. So what happens is the Wizards applied for a roster exception after Thomas Bryant got hurt. Thomas Bryant makes $8.3 million this year, so they are allowed to sign somebody on a one-year deal for up to half of that amount. So it's about $4.17 million. We'll call it 4.2. They're allowed to sign somebody up to 4.2, or they can trade for somebody who's on the last year of their deal for up to that salary as well. Technically up to that salary plus $100,000. So they can use that to get somebody. They can use that to sign someone on the buyout market. They can use it as like a trade exception where they're over the salary cap and they just absorb in a salary without having to match salaries on it. They used a disabled player exception very creatively a couple of years ago in the Markieff Morris trade, where they made a trade matching salaries, and then they absorbed Wes Johnson into the trade exception, which created a trade exception, which I'm sure is confusing 98% of my listeners right now. But all you need to know is they created a trade exception with that trade, which allowed them to get Davis Bertans for free. So they were stringing along assets, and it was very clever trade constructing. There are weird ways you can manipulate the salary cap rules by using this exception. It would be hard for them to get a buyout guy, I'll say. Like, losing teams normally don't get buyout guys.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see them? I mean, they're also close to the luxury tax, so they're not going into the luxury tax.
Really, really close.
Yeah, yeah, like less than a mil. So they're not going into the tax. Yeah. So they got a clear room with a corresponding move if they want to sign somebody for like $3 million. So, we'll see. Anything to add?
Who do you think is the third best player on this team?
Oh my God, I love that question. Okay.
I've been thinking about this a lot.
I love that question. The third best player is rotating.
It's a sneakily, no, you have to pick one.
All right.
That's the rule. It's a really, really like depressingly tough question.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say Davis Bertans because he has the highest highs. He is capable of impacting a game in a way that none of the other candidates are. If Thomas Bryant were healthy, I'd say Thomas Bryant.
Yeah, that's
But But Bertans is capable of impacting a game in a way that other people are not. And look, there's an argument that Russell Westbrook is not the automatic number two because he's just been so inefficient this year on a night-to-night basis. I would put him at the number two because, again, he's capable of impacting a game in a way that the other people aren't. But I would, I don't know, I think I'd say Bertans because he can go off for seven threes and warp a defense. And we've seen him win them games. How many other guys have won them games this year?
Nobody else.
Yeah, well, who would you say?
See, so I was going for who can do the most night. Like, I think this team needs flexibility. My heart wants to say Rui. My head knows that that's like not at all the case. But other than Thomas Bryant, I have no like good answer.
You gotta answer it now. You made me answer. You gotta answer.
I know.
So it's my podcast.
I would say Rui because I think when his defense is on and can, not even on, but just like better than the average, better than the mean. I think he can impact a game like you're talking about, but Bertans, nobody kind of like lifts them like Bertans does with a well-timed, just like absolute bomb from 3 feet in from half court. So I would agree with you on that, but he's been so shaky this season that it's like, he honestly isn't even in like my top four answers for that anymore.
Yeah. He's been so shaky.
I would love to say he's the one I want most of all to sit down with after this season and talk to for like 90 minutes and just be like, tell me how your year has been like for you. Cause I have to think that there's some stories there.
Yeah. And look, he just signed for 5 years. Like,
yeah,
that's got to weigh on you. You know, when you come out, you get off to that ridiculously slow start, you just signed the big contract like that weighs on a guy. I get why Wizards fans would be frustrated with it, but that's also why that weighs on somebody. These are competitive people, you know?
And I think Davis is actually very thoughtful about that too. I think he's pretty forthcoming about his feelings on that stuff. And I think he like reflects on that things like that a lot.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's totally like that. Yeah, I mean, the 5 years is, it's a lot of years.
It's a lot of years.
That's a lot of years. Like when you give him 5 years, you need him to be what Joe Harris has been in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And that's what he was last year, you know, and he hasn't been that. What's weird is he had this streak of two consecutive games with at least two consecutive games where he hit multiple threes. It was the longest streak of his career.
Yeah.
And it just snapped. Again, in the Philadelphia game where he hit one, and it was Chase Hughes who pointed that out first, that it was the longest streak of his career hitting multiple threes. And it's just weird because he has obviously shot so much better over the last month or so, but it doesn't it just feel like a different impact than it did last year?
And part of why I say I really want to sit down and talk to him is because when you are a shooter like he is, and when you are paid for 5 years, like when that is your really like whole entire value, that's got to do an absolute number on your mind. Like when you say it weighs on you, like from the organizational standpoint, for sure. But like, I wonder if he's just like going nuts out there every single time he shoots the basket, or if he's actually able to clear his mind and just be like, I know how to do this. I can hit a three. I can do like, I really wonder what's going on from that point of view for sure.
Yeah. No, it's a good point because that's what it's weighing. I talked about it, weighs on you. Like he got paid for one skill.
Yep.
You know, for as many times as Scott Brooks. Yeah. For as many times as Scott Brooks is going to say he's not just a shooter, he got paid to be a shooter. That is why he got paid.
Absolutely.
And it's not like he's been a bad shooter. He's 38 from three on a really high volume. That's a good shooter. He takes ridiculously hard shots.
Shooter. Yeah.
Yeah. Last year, he was one of the five best 3-point shooters in the NBA. And this year, he hasn't been that. And he got paid like that. And it's, I'm with you. That's hard on a guy. Anyway, Ava, you're doing great work on the beat. I will say, even though you're my competition, that my readers should check out all of your work. You got anything to plug to the readers before, or the listeners before we sign off?
Listen, if you miss a game, I'm covering all of them. That's really all we got time for at a daily newspaper nowadays. Fred, did you realize that this Friday and Saturday, the Wizards have no games. We have no games to cover for back to back. That is the last time this regular season that there will be two days in a row without a game.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And first of all, I'm sorry, because that's a tough realization personally.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Isn't that insane? Every other day from next week, starting next week, every other day there's a game till May 16th.
Wow. That is exhausting. That's 2 months. I mean, Friday is March 19th. That's literally 2 months where they either play on consecutive days or every other day.
Yep. So, you know, keep an eye out on Post Sports, because there will be so much game coverage there. That's my
point. And you can also, while you're checking things out, you can subscribe to The Athletic if you want.
Oh, yeah.
You want to get a great rate, only $3.99 a month, you can go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark, and that's going to get you a full subscription to everything you want at The Athletic. So it's not just going to get you your Wizards coverage. It's going to get you everything, full NBA coverage and WNBA and MLB and NFL and whatever else you want to read on that we've got, you will have access to. You can also listen to this podcast ad-free over at the Athletic app as well. If you don't want to deal with me reading about, you know, Lord knows what the ad of the week is, you can check that out. So go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark and you can sign up for $3.99 a month. Over there, you can head on to iTunes. You can give us a review if you enjoy the podcast. You can leave a written review or give 5 stars. That stuff helps a lot more than you might realize. I don't really understand how I always say iTunes. It's really Apple Podcasts. I don't really understand how that works. I'm even misidentifying the app, but it does help. So if you enjoy the podcast, leave a review, give 5 stars. That's always super helpful. Tell your friends about Wizards After Dark. If you're just randomly listening to this episode, you can find Wizards After Dark wherever you listen to podcasts regularly. I'll be back with another episode probably later sometime this week. And the trade deadline is in 10 days from now, March 25th. So I'm going to be talking a lot of trade deadline stuff leading up to it. So I'm sure I'll be doing at least one trade deadline episode and probably a couple where we touch on trade stuff. And obviously we did some of that today. I'll be back later this week. I'll talk to you guys then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.